You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Welcome, citizens, to This Day in History with Benjamin J. Goldson.
This Day in History, going back to 1943 for the Casablanca Conference. This was between the Western Allies, mainly the United States and the United Kingdom. France was in the mix, but no one really cared about them. And was where they decided on their plan of how they were going to invade occupied Europe. And it was eventually decided that they would invade Italy via the island of Sicily, which would require the support of local people on the ground and would sort of lead to this... the murder of a guy who I'll explain after we play this little clip here.
Sweet.
For 10 epoch-making days, Casablanca became the solar plexus of Anglo-American leadership. The Anfa Hotel was the meeting place when Premier Churchill and President Roosevelt, accompanied by the chiefs of staff of the two countries, laid plans for this year's offensive. The combined staffs were in almost constant session. Admiral of the Fleet Sir Dudley Pound, General Sir Alan Brooke, and Air Chief Marshal Sir Charles Portal for Britain, Admiral King, General Marshal, and General Arnold for the USA, Sir John Dill, General Somerville, Lord Louis Mountbatten, these and many others formed the imposing assembly which gathered in Casablanca. Mr. Churchill arrives for the press conference held in the grounds overlooking the Atlantic. The North African Conference is the fourth occasion on which the two great men have met since the beginning of the war, a marshalling of effort for the more intense prosecution of the conflict. At this informal meeting with the press, a new phrase was born, unconditional surrender for the Axis. What an indication of the heartening situation now prevailing. French unity was brought nearer realization with a meeting of General de Gaulle and General Giraud. It was a gratifying sight to see the cementing of an entente cordiale between the two men who have the future of France so much at heart. The visit to Morocco afforded President Roosevelt an opportunity to see Fort Lyautey, where heavy fighting occurred last November. It is here that a large number of American and French soldiers are buried. The president's wreath was placed in the cemetery where the graves of both nations lie side by side. On the Prime Minister's program was a visit to a warehouse in the harbour. Ship's companies were assembled to hear encouraging words spoken from an improvised platform. His remarks brought forth three of the best. An alfresco meal of boiled ham and Swedes, fruit salad and coffee. This was how the president lunched during his journeying among his troops. As commander-in-chief of the U.S. forces, he derived eminent satisfaction in seeing their fine fettle. Here in Africa are some very good reasons for the perturbed state of the Nazi mind. The Casablanca Conference will greatly add to Germany's concern for the immediate future. Their communiques reflect the seriousness of their military position. General conscription in the Reich, a sudden reversal of their bombastic tone. Everything is at stake now, they cry in press and over the radio. In other words, they don't like the look of 1943 at all. They have reason to fear it. In the fourth year of war, it's the Allies and not the Axis who are demanding unconditional surrender. It is Soviet Russia which has the whip hand in Eastern Europe now. Germany faces invasion today, not Britain. The ring is closing in on the Reich, and there won't be much left of it when the smash comes. Between 20 and 30 Allied service chiefs have already made plans for moves which will spell crisis in Germany.
And as I said before, the first of these moves would be the invasion of Sicily, known as Operation Husky, which would be aided by local members of the Mafia in Sicily. And now, meanwhile, while the Casablanca Conference was happening, you had the murder of a sort of New York Italian-American anarchist radical, Carlo Tresca, who you could probably do a whole story on him, but I'll try to keep it short. He was a sort of veteran unionist, industrial workers of the world. He had split with the Communist Party and sided with sort of Trotsky and the Spanish anarchists. But he'd also always been a very militant anti-fascist, and he was quite outraged in 1941 when, after Pearl Harbor happened, America entered the war. You had a lot of the former fascist sympathizers sort of immediately come out in support of America, and a lot of them attended these sort of wartime rallies. Two of them, Generoso Pope, a newspaper owner, and Frank Garofalo, who was the underboss of the Bonanno crime family, which is one of the major New York mafia groups, were at the same event as Tresca, where he sort of got into an argument with them and stormed out. And then afterwards, in his sort of radical magazine, he started denouncing them and their sort of hypocrisy and asking, you know, why are they being allowed to just whitewash their past? And obviously the reason we now know is because it was part of this deal to invade Sicily.
Yeah.
But of course, nobody knew that at the time.
Essentially winning favors to get in safely to Sicily. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also in the post-war, in the Cold War era, which the mafia was always very anti-communist, and they shot a bunch of them even before World War II was over. But anyway, obviously, so Tresca talking about this, risked exposing this because he almost certainly would have been spied on by Mussolini, who would have thought, well, why are these people suddenly abandoning me? So then he was shot dead about a week before the Casablanca conference, and the crime remains unsolved, although they did arrest one Carmine Galante, who would later be appointed boss of the Bonanno family, and before then would be dispatched to Montreal to oversee the family's heroin importation, which came via Sicily. So it's all this big sort of weird sort of CIA drug thing that can get a bit conspiratorial, but I think it's pretty clear what happened in the case of Tresca. Because also the thing about the mafia is they were always, well, you can kill, you know, a member of the mafia, but it's another thing to kill
a civilian. Yeah.
And so that would have had to have been greenlit on the high level, and so it has to be worth it. And it would have probably been okayed by some of their sort of contacts within military intelligence.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's all a sort of convoluted conspiratorial thing, but I think when you just look at what happened, it's quite clear to see.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.